Hi everyone, Dr. Jenny here. A word about today's episode before we begin. This episode was recorded before the COVID-19 pandemic had really hit the United States and all of the social distancing and shelter-in-place guidelines put into effect. So any recommendations for going to classes or doing any other activities that are in contradiction to those guidelines should be taken in that context. There's still lots of great stuff in here for you, so I hope you enjoy the episode, and until next time, be well. Welcome to What You Want to Know with Dr. Jenny, the podcast where real people ask real questions about health, wellness, and well-being and how to achieve it in these increasingly complex lives we are living. Today, I'm here with Meg. Hi, Meg.
Hello.
Meg is a friend. She's a client. And today, she's here to ask about
health.
All right. Fire it off.
Fire it off. Well, health has been on my mind pretty frequently. In the last 6 years, both of my parents, who are of a certain age, went through pretty significant diagnoses. My dad, at a relatively young age, early 60s, ended up in a nursing home for dementia. Mm-hmm. Growing up, we just were not in a family that did a lot of proactive care, like physicals and healthy diets and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's definitely been on my mind quite a bit, because it is something that I've neglected for a large part of my life.
Sure, sure. Well, I think a lot of us can relate to feeling like we're a little bit behind in terms of our health. I think a lot of us, we discovered actually recently that we're very similar ages. And for those of us that grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know, we didn't grow up with these ideas of like a whole foods, organic, grass-fed diet. We didn't grow up with all these ideas of prevention and eliminating toxic burden and staying on top of our health and things like that. We were just playing outside without sunscreen on, eating our pudding pops and not really worrying about it. Spam, totally. So I think a lot of people can really relate to that. So tell me, what are some of the issues that you've really been struggling with lately?
I think eating healthy is probably a big thing. Mm-hmm. Making sure that I do exercise regularly. Mm-hmm. We have things like heart disease that run rampant in our family, colon cancer, different things like that. But, you know, I think when you're young, you kind of have it in your head of, I don't need to worry about that because I'm young and nothing bad will ever happen to me. Mm-hmm. And then when you get older and your parents start to get older, and you are unfortunately forced to look at what happens when your health is neglected for a long time, it kind of changes your perspective.
Absolutely. So I'm actually going to call you out a little bit because I know that you wrote some questions down ahead of time.
Yes.
And would you mind sharing the very first question on your list? Because I think that that's pertinent to the questions that, you just brought up now about how to eat healthy and how to exercise regularly.
Sure. So the first question I wrote down was, why does it seem as though my brain is telling me I'm undeserving of living a full, healthy life?
Okay. So we talked a little bit about this before, too. I know. We live the first several years of our lives like sponges, just soaking up every single thing that we are exposed to. And because of the way that our brains were designed to work, we imprint negative memories more strongly than positive memories. And the reason for that is because, evolutionarily speaking, back when we were, you know, in a struggle for survival on a regular basis, that conferred a survival advantage. You know, I'm hunting by some rocks, a saber-toothed tiger jumps out, I'm running away from it. I really need to remember that experience so I know how to avoid that danger or escape from that danger in the future. These days, because we are rarely in survival experiences, but because our brain evolved in a survival experience, we're still soaking up these negative memories and experiences more strongly than the positive ones, but they come out not giving us a survival advantage. So we have these self-limiting beliefs that we got either from observing our parents or from an offhanded comment that somebody made to us one time that really hurt our feelings. But when your brain tells you that you're not deserving of something, that usually either comes from watching your role models act in a way that told you that they were not deserving, or humans were not deserving, or you specifically were not deserving. And we also talked a little bit about how it's not really so important to figure out why your brain is doing that to you as it is to stop it, right? To fix the fact that your brain is telling you that. And there's so many techniques to do that. But the first thing is to recognize that you have that limiting belief in the first place, right? In this case, I'm not deserving of living a full and healthy life is the negative belief. And I think consciously, you know, that's not true.
Yes.
Right. Consciously, we know that's not true. Whenever we bring our conscious mind, the light of our conscious mind, to shine on something that was taking place subconsciously, we have an opportunity to act and make a change. And one way to rewrite a self-limiting belief is through hypnosis. One way is through a technique called tapping. One way is through cognitive behavioral therapy. We did a process called Psych-K, which I love, which is sort of like fast hypnosis. But the point is that if you can become aware of the negative self-limiting beliefs that are holding you back, you absolutely 100% can replace those with positive programming that pushes you in the right direction. And I think that's the first step that a lot of people need to take.
I agree.
Excellent. I'm glad you concur.
Second question?
Sure.
Okay.
Lay it on me.
This one probably, well, I know. I think I just said the root of this one, but why do I assume any illness that falls on my parents or a family member will find its way to me?
Well, so what do you think is the answer then, based on what you just said?
I think probably, because I'll call it what it is, it's hypochondria. It's why I feel like I've been to your clinic so many times the last couple of years. But I think it's, you know, growing up, not going to the doctor and having that kind of false sense of, well, I'm fine. Like, maybe only weak people end up at the doctor's office. And then seeing both of my parents get sick so quickly, seriously ill, that now I think it has, like, left scar on my psyche in a way, so that I think every time I feel an ache or a pain, I'm like, this is it. This is the end of the road for me, as opposed to maybe, like, maybe I just need a new bed.
Right.
So
I think there's a lot of layers to what you just said, so I'd like to take a minute and unpack that, right?
Okay.
So one is, you have a living example of people that didn't take care of themselves early on and so had to pay a price later. And so that's like the role model, right, that you had. You also, you know, are educated. You know about genetics. You know that certain things get passed down. And so part of that belief may come from that. Well, if this happened to these people in my family, then I'm probably prone for it to happen to me. I think there is probably also a layer of guilt in there. I didn't take care of myself when I was younger, so now I have to be punished. Now I have to pay the price. It's inevitable that it's going to happen to me. And I think that I wanted to point that out because I think that layer of guilt is there for most of us. And I think that's probably the heaviest layer in that statement. And whenever we're trying to make behavioral change, things that weigh us down and burden us are going to be the things that make it the hardest to make that change consistently, right? So we can say, I'm going to do things differently than my parents so that I don't end up like them, right? We can learn that genetics loads the gun, but environment pulls the trigger. So if we can change our environment, we don't have to express, you know, the diseases that our genes might have as possibilities held within them. But if we don't get rid of the guilt, right? If we don't say, I am worthy of wellness, I am worthy of healing, I'm worthy of living my best life, even though I wasn't always perfect, then that's just like this weighted down emotional backpack that you're dragging around with you as you're trying to get up and go to the gym, as you're trying to get to the grocery store to buy your healthy whole food, as you're trying to meal prep. And so if we can recognize that we carry that guilt and take steps to take that emotional backpack off and just set it down on the ground and leave it behind, it's going to make behavior change so much easier. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. I think what you said, too, about the layer of feeling guilty, mm-hmm. feeling like now you're going to be punished, that, like, definitely hit a piece mm-hmm. of my soul. Mm-hmm. I think I've never been able to articulate it that way, mm-hmm. but, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, and I see this so much across the board, and I know I have felt this way myself too, and I don't know why we have it. I don't know if it's a cultural thing, you know, that was sort of imprinted into our heads because of religion for those of us that used to go to church. I don't know if it's a puritanical thing of we're supposed to always be working hard, and if at any point in our life we were lazy, we're going to be punished. I do think it's cultural, though, and I know that it's not fact, and I know that it's not real, and I know that it's not necessary, and I know that it is not helpful. And so if we can just take it off, which we can, and again, there's so many techniques for doing that too, just recognizing that it's there almost always is the first big step. Right. And then again, the same things that you, the techniques that you can do to eliminate self-limiting beliefs, you can use to get rid of that guilt, like hypnosis, like cognitive behavioral therapy, like tapping, like Psych-K, right? Or just, so for some people, just recognizing that that's the false belief is enough for them to be like, oh, I don't need that anymore. I can put that away.
It's comforting that I'm not the only one.
Oh my God, you are not okay. The only one. If you didn't have that, you'd probably be the only one.
Good. Okay, how about this one? Why do I struggle with maintaining a healthy food diet?
So when you are trying to eat healthy, what are the things that trip you up?
I think convenient things, mm-hmm. like convenience snacks in the food aisle or fast food on the way home mm-hmm. if you worked a 10 or 12 hour day. Mm-hmm. So those little things which you think, oh, it won't hurt me if I do just one thing, if I treat myself just mm-hmm. this one time, and mm-hmm. then that one time turns into, you know, 5 days a week mm-hmm. as opposed to that one time.
Mm-hmm. So we are so busy these days. And as technology has advanced, we have become expected to compete with technology. We're trying to work like machines. So we're working more and more for less and less appreciation, less and less compensation, less and less autonomy, less and less expert status. So we're putting out a lot of energy into our jobs, and we're not getting a lot of energy back from them. And I see that across the board, across industry. So we end up depleted at the end of the day, and we are tired. And the last thing that we want to do is go home and cook for an hour. So convenience is real. And I'm all about being practical. But what I try to tell my patients is that convenient doesn't have to mean bad for you. We are starting to demand healthier and healthier options. We're starting to demand organic alternatives. And because of that, the market is responding. So, for example, here in the Dallas area, there's something called Snap Kitchen. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. So Snap Kitchen, they have a kitchen located somewhere in Dallas, and it cooks all of their food fresh on a daily basis. It's all whole ingredients. It's no preservatives. It's portion controlled. Their meals are split up into what type of proteins in them. So you can do red meat, you can do poultry, you can do seafood, or you can do vegetarian. And then they'll have each meal available in a small, medium, and large size. And you can go in on a Sunday and buy all your lunches and dinners for the week and just have them in the fridge or bring them with you. Now I think they even have an app where you can just place your order online and they'll deliver it to your house. And I don't get paid any money by Snap Kitchen. I don't want you to think that this is an endorsement. It's just an example of a way to get good, nutritious, whole food conveniently so that you don't have to expend extra effort and energy, but you also don't have to compromise your health. Another phenomenon or service that has sprouted up is these meal cooking or meal delivery services. So again, it'll be a central kitchen located somewhere in your area, and you can pay them to cook all of your meals fresh for you for a week, or one meal a day for a week, or two meals a day for a week, and deliver them to your house. And this isn't like the Blue Aprons of the world, where you get a box of ingredients and you still have to assemble it. I mean, they bring you the meal. And a lot of them are organic. A lot of them will have options that you can select for paleo meals or keto meals, which is the ketogenic diet, for those of you that don't know what keto means, vegan meals or whole foods meals. And so you, again, don't have to compromise health for convenience. I haven't looked at the pricing for all of them. I know I found that for Snap Kitchen, that if I don't do the groceries, right, if I don't grocery shop, if I just get my meals from there, it's cost neutral. The couple of most recent meal delivery services in Dallas that I looked up, I know if I don't grocery shop, if I just do the meal service, it's cost neutral. It's when it looks like when you try to do a little combination of the two, right, you get some meals there and you grocery shop, that it can get a little bit expensive. But there's more and more offerings cropping up every day because the demand is there. So I would just say, thankfully, in the time that we're living in, where there's a will, there's a way. So if your barrier to eating healthy is the convenience, don't sacrifice the convenience, but know that you don't have to sacrifice the health either. Just take a little bit of time and find that option that's the best solution for you.
Good to know. And you said Central Kitchen was the other one?
Snap Kitchen is the one that you can actually go to the storefront and buy individual meals, or they have an app and they'll deliver to you. I also will say this, when we are stressed, when we are tired, we tend to crave sugar and carbs, because that is the most easily digestible. That's the fastest rush of energy for anything that you can put in your body. Now, it's not long-lived energy, right? So you'll eat it, you'll feel better for a short period of time, maybe even just while you're eating it, and then pretty soon after you feel bad again. And the reason why is you eat it, you absorb it really quickly, your blood sugar spikes, you have to make a lot of insulin to bring that blood sugar back down, your blood sugar will then plummet. When your blood sugar dips, you will feel tired, you will feel cranky, you will feel moody. All the things that we said trigger you to want to eat more sugar and carbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you've released a lot of insulin, which is a pro-inflammatory hormone. And so you're going to be more prone to building up fat around your midsection. You're going to be more prone to gaining weight. So it's a vicious cycle. I also want to touch on something that you said, which is this little saboteur notion that crops up for a lot of us, which is that I can treat myself just this once.
Yes.
I deserve a treat, and I can do it now because I can be good tomorrow. So this is such a well-known phenomenon that Starbucks, convenience stores, Walgreens, Home Depot, Academy Sports, all of these stores out there have made the length of their checkout lines like 5 times as long, because they know that as you go down the checkout line, if you say no to this and no to that, no to this and no to that, by the time you've said no to a certain number of things, you're going to feel like you deserve a treat. And you're going to say yes to the next thing. So if their checkout line is long enough, you're going to have one impulse buy at least on that checkout line, because you've in your head been good so many times that you deserve a treat, right? Don't fall for it. The other thing I'll say is that this idea, so that's the saboteur, okay? That's the phenomenon, right? That I deserve a treat because I've been so good. We can be so easily tricked into thinking that we've been so good. This idea of I can be bad now because I'll be good tomorrow. What we're doing is we're practicing doing the thing that's bad for ourselves in exchange for a moment of feeling a little bit better. But like I said before, when you do that, it creates this cascade that perpetuates itself, right? You're going to crave more sugar. You're going to be more tired. You're going to be more cranky. You're going to gain more weight, which is going to make you feel worse about yourself, which is going to make you want to treat yourself even more. So if you can replace I deserve a treat with I have the opportunity of this moment to do the right thing right now, instead of I need to be good every day for a year so that I can fit into a bathing suit, which is overwhelming, right? If I had to be good every day for a year so that I can fit into a bikini, that just seems really hard, and that makes me feel like I want to treat myself right now.
I was going to say, I'd be good for a day.
I'd be good for a day, right? But the other problem with that is if I'm good for a year so I can fit into the bikini, what happens on day one of the second year, right? Do I just go right back to where I was before and then gain all the weight back, which is what happens to a lot of people. If you can get into the habit of, the only chance that I have is this moment. In this moment, I'm going to choose right action. And I'm not going to worry about the moment after that or the moment after that or the moment after that. All I'm dealing with is right now. That is not overwhelming. And you can choose the right thing. And maybe a few moments down the line, you make a bad decision. But then the next moment after that, you say, in this moment, I'm going to do the next right thing. What we practice gets stronger because neurons that fire together wire together. So the more that you can practice saying, I am in this moment, what is right action? I'm going to do right action now. The more you practice that, the stronger the neural circuitry that you use to practice that becomes, the easier it gets to go down that pathway. And the more you practice that, by default, the less you are practicing the I deserve a treat, I'm going to reward myself right now. And what we don't use breaks down like a highway that's not maintained, right? So the more you practice the good thing, the easier it becomes to do the good thing and the less habitual it is to do the bad thing.
Makes sense.
It's simple, right? It does make sense, but it's so helpful to be reminded of it, right?
I think that's what I need. I need like little post-it notes or something. Oh my goodness. In the mirror every morning.
100%. 100%. But literally put the post-it notes there. Yeah. Like I was joking with my wife the other day. I was like, I'm going to write remember across my upper thigh so that every time I go to pee in the bathroom, I see it. But some people literally get it tattooed on them. I think the bathroom mirror is a great place to put it because you're going to brush your teeth at least once a day. Hopefully a lot of us are doing it twice a day and you'll get to see that remember sign there. That's sort of where I'm at right now. I'm at the place where I know that if I can just remember to do the things that I know I'm supposed to do all of the time, if I can just remember, then I'm going to do them and I'm going to soar. If I don't remember to do them, they're not going to happen. So whatever you can do to get yourself to remember, because the forgettery is so, so, so real.
Do you think, so I've read that it takes like a minimum of 3 months to actually build a habit that you stick with. Do you think that's kind of a myth? Because I've been on diets or I've been on, you know, not necessarily a diet, but just restricting a food group in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And I've hit the 90 days and I still feel like I'm going strong. But then it's like, I do forget. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that that, for me anyway, is true, that 90 days and it should stick.
Yeah. So the answer that I'm going to give you is not based on science, full disclosure. The answer that I'm going to give you is based on my experience and what I feel is true about this subject, because I've heard 90 days. I've heard it takes 7 days to make a new habit and 3 days to break it. I've heard a lot of different stats on how long it takes to ingrain behavioral change into us. What I do know is that it doesn't take very long of doing something that is good for you to start to feel better. I think that the more you can tap in to the ways in which you're feeling better in the moment as you do the good behavior, the faster that that's going to be a habit, because you're activating that reward circuitry in your brain. You're enjoying the new thing that you're doing versus it seeming like a chore. And it's gonna be the thing that you get to do for you every day versus the thing that you have to show up and do for yourself because you made a commitment, which just feels like work, right? So, you know, we talked about I'm going to diet every day so I can look good in a bikini in a year. No, that's so hard to commit to, but it doesn't take nearly that long of eating healthy to start noticing I'm sleeping better. I have more energy during the day. My concentration and focus is better. My joints don't hurt as much. I'm not getting up to pee as much in the middle of the night. You know, I have energy that lasts. My mood is more stable. All these things that are really noticeable and really impact not just how you feel during your day, but how effectively you perform during your day, which then circles back and impacts how you feel during the day, right? Because if I'm doing great at my job and it's easy and it's flowing and I'm not getting hung up, that's not draining my energy and I'm feeling good. The more you can tap into that as you go, the faster the change starts to feel like a treat. The faster the change starts to feel like a reward. And the better it feels to do something, the more likely you are to stick with it.
I like the idea of the good stuff turning into the treating yourself.
100%. So that's another thing. Okay, so we do all deserve a treat sometimes, right? 100% we deserve a treat a lot of times. Does that treat have to have calories in it? Mm-hmm. No, it does not. That's right? Valid. A hot bath with Epsom salts and lavender essential oil can feel like such a treat. A foot massage can feel like such a treat. And I know all over Dallas, and I suspect all over the country, there are these reflexology foot massage places that you don't even need an appointment for. You can just walk in and get like a 40-minute foot rub for $20. It's really inexpensive. And that has actually become my favorite treat. My wife and I, we have a date night every week, and that is how we end our date night, is with a reflexology foot rub, which we never make an appointment for, which is lovely. You just drop in, and it's so cost effective. And we do that instead of dessert. We do that instead of going to a bar and drinking afterwards, which is what we used to do. And so it saved us a lot of calories and brought us a lot of joy.
I like that. Mm-hmm. All right. This is all good. I think the other question I had on here pertained to exercising. Exercising to me, I know it's important. I know that I feel good after I do it. And mm-hmm. I do exercise even currently today, mm-hmm. every single day. I walk. That's mm-hmm. my preferred exercise choice, mm-hmm. is just walking. But it can, there is a burnout factor that occurs with it, even if I change my route, right? Even if I change the scenery around mm-hmm. me. And so to me, it's like if I comfortably can walk 45 minutes and then I have 2 or 3 days in a row where I'm only able to get in 20 minutes of walking, mm-hmm. it becomes, what's the point? That question starts to hit my mind, is what's the point if I'm not able to sustain this perfect amount of time mm-hmm. every single day?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I heard a couple of issues come up in that. So mm-hmm. I'm going to address the what's the point one first. So for me, the point is how you feel about yourself and your self-worth, right? For me, the point is saying, I know that I'm worthy of self-care. I know that I'm deserving of good health. I know that I am my number one priority, because no one's going to take care of me like I'm going to take care of myself. And if I'm taking care of other people, I'm not going to show up for them as well as I will if I am well cared for. And so I am going to make it a priority to show up for myself every day and put in the self-care. And even if I can't get the full time, even if I don't go as hard as I can, I have the habit of showing up for myself every day because I'm worth it. So I show up and I do what I can because I'm worth it, because I'm the first priority that I have. That makes it to where you do a little something every day, because I think all of us have had the experience of, I'm just going to take a day off. And that day turns into 2 days, and that 2 mm-hmm. days turns into a week. And before we know it, it's a year later and nothing has changed for us. And we're like, what happened? I was exercising so well for, 2 or 3 months there. And then the other thing is that the body loves to move. Movement, it helps lubricate your joints. It helps squeeze the lactic acid out of your muscles. It helps circulate the blood to your internal organs. It helps circulate the blood to your brain. There's so many benefits to movement that any amount of movement that you can get for yourself in a day is worth it. So don't trick yourself into thinking if it's not 45 minutes, it doesn't count. 20 minutes is so much better than nothing. Oh my goodness, it's so much better than nothing. So what's the point? It's that you deserve the care every day, and you're trying to establish the habit of treating yourself like a priority and allowing your body to move as much as it can. Okay. I have days when I'm not feeling it, and I might not go as hard those days, but I still try to get myself to show up. The showing up is the most important part, right? You show up, you do what you can, you thank yourself for showing up and doing what you can, and you don't sweat it, and then you show up again the next day. So that's to answer the what's the point. The other thing that I heard come up there is the fact that boredom can be death when it comes to any kind of habit or behavioral change. The brain loves variety. It loves a challenge. It loves exploration. It loves newness. And so if you're doing the same kind of exercise over and over again for a long time, it can start to feel like a chore instead of like a joy. And so I think it's great to mix it up. You know, if you said the first thing you'll do is change your route, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But sometimes that still seems boring. But then you started with saying that walking is your preferred form of exercise. So what I would ask you to do then is think to yourself, well, is there another form of movement that I really enjoy?
I think probably Tai Chi, probably Pilates.
Awesome. So those are two very awesome, very different forms of movement. So for Tai Chi, you could find a Tai Chi class, you could pay the money, you could show up at their scheduled time, at their scheduled location, and that's wonderful because there is something to be said for doing things in a group. There's something to be said for following an expert, for a guide. I do think that you get a little bit of extra there. But we said the first priority is showing up. And so if payment is a barrier, if schedule is a barrier, if getting to a physical location is a barrier, well, guess what? There's something called YouTube now, which is the greatest resource for all things free and informative that we have ever, 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 ever had. And so you could get on YouTube and search 15-minute Tai Chi, right? 15-minute Tai Chi for back pain, 15-minute Tai Chi for weight loss. I love doing a form of energy work called Qigong, which is, you can make this a very complicated distinction, but let's just say it was like the mother of Tai Chi. Like it came first. It's more of the internal meditative movement art, and Tai Chi is more the martial arts application of Qigong. But they're both working with your energy to move energy through your body, open up the channels, balance your energy, and optimize your health. The reason I'm bringing up Qigong is because with Tai Chi, I think the forms are a little bit more rigid, a little bit more planned. I don't know if you do a YouTube search, for example, for Tai Chi for back pain, Tai Chi for weight loss. I don't know what will come up, but I know that you could put in Qigong for sleep, Qigong for balance, Qigong for back pain, and find a whole bunch of things coming up. So for those of you that want to try that, Qigong is spelled Q-I for Qi, and then G-O-N-G. Gong is a separate word. So Tai Chi, right? And then Pilates, I think Pilates is wonderful. I have to admit, I've never done Pilates personally. I don't think that there is, well, I don't know if there's a way to do Pilates outside of a Pilates class or outside of having the equipment. I think there must be, because I think I used to see DVDs of Pilates that you can do at home.
You can get some old school DVDs of it. Now, I have Amazon Prime, and there mm-hmm. is literally dozens of free Pilates videos you can do on that. I don't do anything as intricate that, because I know if you go to a studio, they're going to have equipment there. Mm-hmm. This is, I'm going to say this as delicately as I can. Mm-hmm. I don't do Pilates very often. I will sometimes do it to mix it up, but mm-hmm. it doesn't piss me off the way yoga does. I'm not a very good yoga student. I'm just not. Not a very good mm-hmm. one. I don't generally stick with yoga, mm-hmm. And it's not worth my time. Mm-hmm. But you brought up Qigong. I think it's funny. You actually recommended Qigong to me. Mm-hmm. I have anxiety. I've struggled with anxiety since I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. and it had we'll call it a flare-up this past year. Mm-hmm. And Qigong, I don't mind it. It doesn't mm-hmm. infuriate me the way yoga does. I think I don't think of it as exercise, though, because to me, it's something that I use to fall asleep at mm-hmm. night. So there's like a 7-minute mm-hmm. YouTube video of it that mm-hmm. I do. Very, very easy. Very, very soothing. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It is exercise. I just don't equate it to that.
It is exercise. I have so many things to say about what you just said, so let me try to remember all of them. So the first thing is they did a very interesting study where they had a group of people do Qigong, they had a group of people do standard regular exercise, and they had a group of people do nothing. And the Qigong group and the X Standard exercise group both lost comparable amounts of weight to each other. So even though it is gentle, even though it's flowing, even though it doesn't go with the philosophy of having to break yourself down to build yourself up, it is still an effective form of exercise and weight loss. It also has a lot of other benefits: balance, coordination, tendon strength, joint mobility, preventing dementia, promoting cardiovascular health, lowering inflammation. The list goes on and on and on. And I'm glad you don't mind it so much.
No, I don't.
I'm not surprised that you use it as something to go to sleep, because I know at least when I taught it to you, it was for sleep. Yes. That was the purpose of what we were doing. But it can be used for so many things. The other thing I want to say is, let's just acknowledge that yoga is wonderful, but people are different, right? And what I try to tell all of my patients and clients is, all of these modalities out there that exist to achieve greater states of health, they all work. All of them work. They work if you do them. So all roads lead to Rome. The question is, what road is the funnest for you to walk down, right? And so it's cool if you hate yoga. Don't do yoga. And for those of you out there that are like, but I love yoga.
Do it.
Do yoga. It's awesome, right? And for those of you that love Pilates, do Pilates. And for those of you that love to run, go running. You'll want to find the movement that speaks to you, because all movement is good movement. It's just about what lights you up, because the best form of exercise is the exercise that you can get yourself to do on a consistent basis. So what I would do if I were you is I would choose whatever form of movement is lighting you up the most at this moment, and I would do it until it doesn't light you up anymore, and then I would move on to another thing, and I would have maybe, let's say, five things, right? Five different styles of movement. Let's start with that. Or you could start with three different types of movement, right, that you rotate through. So say yours were walking, Tai Chi, and Pilates. Walk until walking is boring, do Tai Chi until Tai Chi is boring, do Pilates until Pilates is boring, and then go back to walking with the mindset of an advanced beginner. Go back to walking with this open-minded, non-judgmental awareness of, can I go deeper into this form of movement? Can I tap into something here that I wasn't tapping into before? And see if you can develop your mastery. And this is going to sound funny because we're talking about walking. See if you can develop your mastery as a walker. And then see if you can further develop your mastery in Tai Chi. See, it doesn't sound funny when we talk about mastery in Tai Chi, because we've all heard of Tai Chi masters. But any activity that you do, you can always go deeper in. You can always tap into greater benefits. You can always tap into greater joy. And so to just remember that you don't know it all, and I'm talking to myself as I'm talking to all of you too, that don't think that you know everything there is to be gotten out of this just because you've done it before.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
I just thought of it. No.
Any other questions?
Okay. This has nothing to do with the questions on the sheet of paper I have, but... So Pilates is something I've touched on and off again, and I'm probably going to hit it hard this week, because I have an older friend who's gone through menopause, and last year on my birthday, told me all about how your pelvic wall crumbles and all of this, and it terrified me, because, you know, as a woman, you don't want your bits to fall apart in any given time of your life.
I would say, as anybody, you don't want your bits to fall apart.
It's the worst. On my birthday, she tells me this
too.
Oh
my goodness.
But anyway, the point of it was, I had read an article about how Pilates can help strengthen your pelvic wall and all of that. So maybe I'm thinking Kegels just isn't enough to keep you strong. But is there any cure to keeping yourself together with exercise, or is it kind of the law of time where this is just going to happen?
Well, I think that, gravity plus time yields greater and greater effect, right? Gravity plus time yields effect. So the greater the gravity or the greater the amount of time, the more an effect it's going to have, unless there's something on the other side of the equation that's subtracting that effect, right? And so pelvic floor exercises like Kegels, like pelvic rehab, like Pilates, 100% can be super helpful for maintaining pelvic floor integrity, for maintaining pelvic floor strength. Now, for some people, it's not just gravity plus time. For some people, there's been an event. Like for women, most commonly, it's childbirth, right? Childbirth can really stretch out and weaken your pelvic floor muscles. And for some women, depending on the degree of damage, those exercises may not be enough to reverse everything that's happened. But I haven't seen a single case where it hasn't been helpful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've seen lots of cases where women have been able to avoid surgery because of being diligent with doing their exercises.
Keep it tight, ladies.
Keep it tight. I know, right? Oh, that's what I was going to say. Okay, so for all of you out there that are runners, okay, nothing against running. Running is beautiful. I love running. That is a lot of pressure on the pelvic floor. And so I remember when I was in residency and we were doing a pelvic floor I was in medical school. I was watching a pelvic floor reconstruction surgery on a man that was in his 30s that was a marathon runner, right? And he had just run so much that his pelvic floor gave out, okay? So I'm not telling you guys don't run. Please run, but maybe run on more natural surfaces if you can. Maybe mix up the running with other kinds of exercises. Try to be sure that you're doing some things to help support your pelvic floor as you're, you know, asking it to hold all your organs in place while you're pounding the pavement.
Yes. All right, that's a good tip. All right. I think you've answered all of my questions. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I'll tell you, the questions that you have are questions that so many people out there have. So thank you for coming on. I know it was really helpful for a lot of people.
Yay.
Yay. And thank you guys for showing up and listening. If you have any questions, if you would like to hear a podcast about a certain topic, send me an email at drjenny@simplele.com. And until next time, be well.